know we have a pretty busy and full agenda, so I'm going to turn it over to staff at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and through you to the members of our City Council. We actually have two presentations for you this evening. The second one, which will be conducted by Engineer Rick Toole, will be an update on several projects at the request of our members of our City Council, very specifically University Parkway and the Doherty Road project. But before we get there, we wanted to give you an update. As you will recall, quite some time ago, we appeared before you and not only tried to articulate what a serious concern the lack of attention has been in the city of Aiken over the past two or three decades in dealing with our infrastructure, but that the fact that there was an absolute need to put together a long-range plan. So we, I think it's about 6 or 7 months ago, George gave an initial presentation. The truth is that an extraordinary amount of work has already taken place, and I want to applaud the efforts of Michelle and George. As you will see, much information has been gathered, and I am confident that we're headed in the right direction to in a long-term way, in a comprehensive way, putting a plan together to address our infrastructure. Now, the projects that George are going to be discussing are really the highest priority projects that need attention, but it was our hope and our desire to be able to present to you over the next year a long-range plan that includes the possibility of CPST-4. Now, I'm not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that the residents of Aiken will or have decided that there will even be a CPST-4. My position, though, as your city manager, is that if there is to be a CPST-4, that all or most of it absolutely needs to be committed to addressing our infrastructure needs. And you'll just get a quick glimpse tonight about why your staff has concluded that. I mentioned during the budgetary process last year that I believe that we're headed towards a crisis situation. The good news is that there's still time left to address these issues in a timely fashion. But I also mentioned to you that if we let another 2 or 3 years go by without addressing this issue, then what is an issue that can be addressed will enter the category of a financial crisis, and none of us want to see that. And so with that, I want to introduce Michelle Jones, who has a brief summary, and then George will be giving you the presentation this evening. Thereafter, we expect that in the spring, we will be presenting you an actual financial plan. Now, something is taking place at this time. Our engineering staff and our engineering consultants are working on assessing the need for attention to the infrastructure plan. They're working with our financial team, putting together a financial model. So it isn't just the engineering side, it's also the financial side as well. So that well before you receive our operating budget for next year, you're going to see a financial plan to address the highest priority projects that George is going to introduce to you. So having said that, Michelle, do you want to just kick us off?
Sure. Thank you, John, and thank you, members of council that are here, and all of our illustrious guests. Before I begin, I would also like to thank you all. My name is Michelle Jones. I am the new Public Works Director, and appreciate the opportunity to serve the city in this capacity. As John said, we've got a very detailed presentation that we prepared, and we'll kind of be going through it here as quickly as we can, but I want to kind of open up with a little bit of an overview of what we'll be discussing. The presentation outline, of course, will begin with our infrastructure update, which will kind of go into the infrastructure plan, if you will, based on our new risk-based planning approach that we are now implementing, or we have been implementing, I should say, over the past year. So that will open up with that, and then go into a brief road projects update, which will go over two projects. I'll go into that briefly. Insofar as our infrastructure update, the outline, I'm going to go over some key strides, as I call them, that have been made as it relates to our infrastructure initiatives, and followed by Brad Jeffries, who is our GIS consultant, will give a brief overview of that, the risk-based planning approach, which is what we've been basing all of our infrastructure studies on, or implemented plans on, and then George will go over all of the planned projects that have been identified based on this powerful tool that we're using in this GIS-based software. As far as the road projects update, as you know, University Parkway, that corridor, and the Doherty at Whiskey Road intersection, those two projects, Rick Toole has graciously joined us. He will provide that overview. As far as your handouts are concerned, everybody should have each presentation and all of our slides. And in the interest of time, we would just ask that, you know, as hold all of the questions to the end. And if you want to address specific questions on a specific slide, you can do so, but we would ask that we save all the questions until the end of each presentation.
Are those extra copies?
So the infrastructure update itself, key strides. Obviously, our strategic plan has identified infrastructure as the top priority through FY 2017 and beyond. So under the topic of improving our public infrastructure, as you can see, we've purchased that new Innovyze software I mentioned. We've confirmed the cost of water, sewer, and stormwater needs, which will be the subject of today's presentation. We've also planned for costs of building and maintenance. We've hired a new stormwater engineer. We've also instituted a roads program, which the funds from that will be generated from the annual vehicle property tax. And that'll go towards our road maintenance project. As it relates to reestablishing the Department of Public Works, as you all know, we have consolidated our public services and our engineering and utilities divisions into one cohesive public works department, and have hired a new public works director, yours truly, for that purpose. So we're making strides there. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brad, and he's going to discuss the risk-based planning approach that we are embarking on, or have embarked on.
Thank you, Michelle. Again, my name is Brad Jeffries. I just want to thank everybody for having me talk about these important projects. The city has embarked on a GIS program over the last 20 years. Mapping its infrastructure, its manholes, its pipes, its valves, its hydrants. And about 2.5 years ago, George approached me about better utilizing that data to not just have a very accurate map, but also using it for asset management. We interviewed several software vendors, had them come in, do presentations, and we ended up choosing the Innovyze InfoMaster for a multitude of reasons. And I'm just going to go over some of the results of that work that we've done. So this has not just been about purchasing a piece of software. It's also been about a cultural shift in the way we want to plan on our rehabbing and taking care of our infrastructure. And the city of Aiken is not unique in this problem. This happens all over the country. So a pretty typical approach is a historical planning approach. So, well, last year we spent X amount of dollars in our budget on rehabilitating our infrastructure. Well, this year we're probably going to do X plus 20%. And that's just been the way things have done. Well, the way we're looking at it now is we're trying to assess actual risk in our utilities. Where are our problems going to happen? It's a prediction of some sorts, but we can use some tools, and we can use the software to help us predict where those problems happen. And we go through the historic approach. Yes, we may spend the X amount of dollars, but we may have not spent it in the correct areas. So it's a three-step process. The first process is the calculation of risk, and I want to go over what the likelihood of failure and consequence of failure, the rules that we use in order to do the risk assessment. Once that assessment's done and that has taken place, we start to build a rehabilitation engine. We look at rehab costs, we look at budget scenarios, and we actually come up with methods to rehab the system. And then ultimately, the software will be able to produce us a prioritized capital plan. We aren't there yet, but we're heading in that direction. So what the software does is it looks at two important items: consequence of failure and likelihood of failure. And the consequence of failure for our sewer risk, we looked at proximity to churches, schools, and medical facilities. If a pipe is close to one of these very important facilities, then it becomes rated higher in the system. Proximity to high volume customers. Obviously, the high volume customers inside the city are important. If they lose service, then you have bigger issues. Proximity to USGS streams, that determines an economical impact. That if we have a spill in one of these areas, then it has a higher economical impact than if we have a spill in somewhere, in some other place. Pipe diameter, of course, the larger the pipe, the more sewer we have flowing through that pipe, a higher priority. Intersection of pavement, proximity to railroad, proximity to downtown area. Quite honestly, that is in there because it generally costs more when you have to dig up in these historic areas. You have asphalt, you have concrete, you have businesses in that area. Likelihood of failure, we look at material, the type of pipe, PVC, plastic, steel, those types of things. Age, how long has the pipe been in the ground? Soil type, because soils can affect metal pipes. We also look at count of backups and overflows. We have a work order system that we've been tracking where our problems are occurring, and those tell us where inside the city we're having problems. So we ran our risk analysis, and the risk analysis produced these maps. And in these maps, you see these bright red areas here. Those are our higher risk pipes. Does not mean that they're gonna fail tomorrow, but it is the more, or the higher priority pipes in the system. It also gives us results of, and it shows us how those pipes come up with. So is it the consequence of failure that made those high? Is it the likelihood of failure that made those high? And we're generally looking at this as our most important areas. And in those areas, you have 40 miles of pipe that are high and 12 and a half miles of pipe that are extreme. So those are obviously the first ones that we want to go out and do assessments on.
Those are real numbers for the city.
Yes, sir. Those are real numbers. Same thing for water. The consequence of failure and likelihood of failure, very much of these lists are the same. I will mention that the length of pounding area is something that's not in our sewer. What that describes is an area that if a pipe in this area fails, a large amount of customers are potentially lost. And it's because of valves and the way the valves are plugged into the system. So we're gonna talk a little bit about that in a minute. So, and there's a map, same map. This is the water system. You see your downtown area are your higher risk pipes generally. We have some older pipes that have high service counts. And the same areas, or the same numbers that we saw with sewer, we've got 3.7, 5.5, 4.1 out there in our high risk. So we've got 13 miles of extreme, 17 miles of high. So we're not just looking at pipes, we're also looking at the other assets, valves being one of them, hydrants, meters, those types of things, but valves, more importantly. A valve, obviously, on a water system is used to isolate a part of the system. Some valves isolate small streets, turn off a certain amount of customers. Some valves turn off a lot of customers. So we want to find the ones that have 50 or more customers, that if that particular valve were to fail, and we need to go replace it, over 50 customers would be temporarily down. So we looked at those numbers to analyze. And we actually were able to, on the map, pinpoint these exact valves. Again, it doesn't mean these valves are gonna fail, but it means they need to be tested higher on our priority list. So if a valve fails while trying to isolate an area, a number of valves may have to be turned off in order to isolate that pipe. And this is called the valve pounding area. And what we did was we went through and we found, again, another list of valves that would require an additional 5 valves to be turned off in order to isolate that pipe. So it's another list of critical valves that need to be addressed and looked at. I mentioned earlier the work order system that we also are creating using the GIS. So we're not just using the Innovyze, we're also looking at some different methodologies to make sure that the output from our Innovyze product is actually accurate and matches what we think is what's going on with the system. So here's a heat map that we were able to generate from the work order system just looking at leaks. And this is over the last, 2.5 years?
Yes.
2.5 years of leaks, and you see the areas where the most of the leaks are actually occurring in the system.
Where are those, George? It's still downtown?
No, we're
no,
going to talk
downtown's here.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about some of them.
Okay. Right. Sorry. I want to steal your show?
That's all right.
It looks like
what's that
area?
Okay.
And then,
Yeah. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to George, and he's going to talk about some of the projects. Thank you again.
So we've taken that information, and, you know, the trick, of course, is to turn it into a project that you can actually make improvements and spend your money wisely. So now that we know a little bit about where we want to spend our money, we are developing projects. This is just a reminder from the last slide of you know, the size of our assets that we're taking care of. So sanitary sewer, we had we've updated the Innovyze logic. We have 52 miles of extreme or high risk sanitary sewer, 96 miles of medium risk, and 136 miles of low or negligible risk. So that's, you know, there's some good news in there, but now we know that it's the 52 that we want to start looking at. I'd point out that the 96, they're the ones that are the old. And this was the original presentation we did last year in January. And you can see we had a lot of gray area. We were still putting a lot of the information into Innovyze. So, and we didn't have a lot of critical consequence of failure risk put into the logic. So this was mostly likelihood of failure, and it didn't combine the other factor. So we have another map now that kind of shows that, you know, a lot of the areas didn't really change, but when you added some consequence of failure, you started seeing some outlying areas. And, you know, like even that area through the wood side, that's the main collector line that comes through. Now, it's a larger line. It feeds the wood side lift station. And what you end up finding out is that this line collects a lot of the sewage that comes from even as far as Citizens Park and Deodore and all those different areas. And so you actually have quite a bit of flow coming through there. So it becomes a pipe, not necessarily, it's a new pipe. It's not likely to fail, but it has a high consequence of failure. So that's one that you want to start monitoring, and you start wanting to look at it before it becomes a problem. So our focus became, as a result of all of this, you know, repair any known issues. The Sand River Basin gravity lines, that's the area that in all the maps is feeding and goes through Hitchcock Woods. We have sewer capacity to support economic development. That's something that with some of the opportunities that we had, we started realizing, you know, where we have to grow in order to service future demand. Investigate pipe segments with elevated consequence of failure, what I was just mentioning. We really need to do a hydraulic model of the city system, because we're going to do a good evaluation of where we need to grow our assets so we can support economic growth. Downtown, for example, the Renaissance, how are we going to support all of that? That area has not so much an issue with can it handle it. It's how much I&I you have. How much failure do you have that is using up capacity for stormwater, when that's just a waste of money, it's a waste of capacity, and we've got some better things to do with the pipes that we have there. Provide key equipment to utilities crew and decide the work for the next phase, because every time you go through and you do a new risk assessment, you got another one next year, because things are going to start aging out, and you find out more, you refine your numbers, and you just continue to do more work. So our first project, and the one that we spent a fair amount of time on, and is to grout the Sand River Basin gravity lines. This is a project, there's about 49 miles that are in the high-risk area. From one assessment to the other, that number changed a little bit. But we have the opportunity through DHEC to have a state revolving fund loan, low interest, 1.8%. And we have done an analysis that says that we could, for $10 million, apply a grout. And what happens with this is, I actually went to grout boot camp so I could understand what the process was and make sure I believed in it and understand the quality control that you need to have, because you could grout, and if you don't do a good job, you're wasting your money. What happens is, downtown, we have pipe joint sections that are 2.5 feet, 4 feet, 6 feet, 8 feet. The when we look at and inspect the pipes, it's all mostly clay pipe. It's actually in pretty good condition, but what you have is you have joints that are not, you know, letting water in. Some have roots. You have hammer taps where the technique was to literally just hammer a hole in and stick a service connection into it. And so all of these are not properly sealed to the exterior. So what happens is you have a grout and a system. It cameras, moves it along. You go over a joint. You inflate the two ends, and then a grout is put in. It's liquid at the start, and they can formulate the amount of time that you want to disperse and let it go out into the soil and surround the joint, and then it solidifies. And once it's solidified, it's inert, it stabilizes the joint, and it keeps the water from coming back in. It's nice because it's water, basically, when it escapes where the water's coming in and you seal it. You can do that for the joints, any of the service taps, and for the manholes. And of course, in this area, we have a lot of brick manholes. It was, you know, the technique of the time to create a brick manhole. And as you can imagine, a lot of mortar is starting to you know, leak out. So our project would be to install grouting. It has about a 20% cost to replacement. The grouting rating is rated to last 25 to 35 years, and it will reduce the INI, infiltration inflow, from the water in the ground, and we also have a bacterial impact on the Sand River. You know, we have a lot of water that goes down Hitchcock Woods, stormwater. It has the opportunity to mingle. We don't know. We are measuring and starting to read how much the stormwater has bacteria flowing into Sand River as part of our DHEC stormwater permit. If you go to like the tributary that the Sand River dumps into, you get into Horse Creek. Horse Creek is an affected river per DHEC for fecal coliform. It doesn't mean that it's all coming from the city. There's a lot of horses and a lot of animals that go through Sand River in the basin. But this is a suspected source. And so we will be addressing some of those issues while we are also doing a grouting, which will reclaim capacity for us. It's about an 18-month project. We're going to, council approval, we would work to apply a loan, and we'll talk about the funding and so on and so forth in a little bit.
You answered one of them, which was, you said 18 months. I was going to ask you how long something like this would take. And then the second one was, and I may know, but I'm just going to ask to make sure I do, new sanitary sewer put in the ground. What's the life expectancy for that? I mean, that would be a PVC pipe.
Would expect it to last 50 years is the typical life expectancy.
I mean, we're basically talking about for 1/5 of the cost, maybe getting half the lifespan that you would have brand new.
And it might even be better than that, but you know, they haven't had this in the ground long enough to really prove. They've had 20 years, and it looks great, and so you know, they're projecting 25, 30. Some would claim 35, 40, but that's not hard, you know, facts right now.
We can always hope.
So the Sand River Basin, this is the area that we're looking to grout, and this is the Hitchcock Woods, and we have quite a few collector lines that are coming through, and then the downtown area. What we have identified is the risk changed a little bit from our first to our second map. The red is still our high critical. The black is what it doesn't have the same consequence of failure that we had for our logic in our system. So we have 49 miles to do grouting, and we think we can do everything here. If there came a cost issue because there were more joints, or there was, you know, a problem associated with, you know, doing all this work that was exceeding cost, then we would back off the black areas. This is Camilla Hills. This is Aiken Estates. These are some of the areas around. So we're planning for contingency as well.
I can't read the legend, so what's the red and what's the...
The red is the highest risk,
okay.
And the black actually turned into a lower risk.
Okay.
And so we still want to grout it. It makes sense to do it as you've got a lot of pieces that are connecting, and you'd want to grid the whole basin anyway. So
That's a gravity flow
with the
downtown.
It's gravity flow basically downtown. So these
count the 49 miles, right?
Yes, it is.
So the 10 million and the 49 miles would count the black as well.
Our best estimate of time when all these were put in is in the 30s. We have a map dated 1940 that basically describes all these lines in the ground. These were, you know, when the bomb plant came in, and so that's in the kind of the 50s time frame, and it does have, you know, different materials and things. So the next project is investigate elevated consequence of failure pipe segments. We got 15 miles of this type of pipe that, as I said, were kind of these outliers. We were focusing pretty much in the Sand River Basin, thinking that was our biggest concern, but we recognize that we have some areas on that we need to look at as well. So what we would do is we would video inspect, evaluate the condition, and develop rehabilitation recommendations for that defective pipe. And once, you know, you look at these collectors, and Woodside would be a good example, they'll probably show that everything is just fine. Well, we'll schedule for a 5-year, follow-up, you know, it's kind of like a health checkup. You need to keep an eye on it. Some of these pipes are concrete. And anything that is a concrete sanitary sewer pipe really should be looked at probably every 3 years. So it'll kind of depend on what it is. And this becomes part of your proactiveness, is to kind of see whether, you know, you're getting some abnormal wear. Lift station capacity. As I said earlier, we started a hydraulic model as a result of the development opportunities that we had in the Powder House road area. The developers wanted to know what they would have to invest in to handle all the additional homes that they were proposing to build. Well, to do that, if you have a hydraulic model, you can answer that. So we went out and worked with a consultant to do a very limited model of the areas of concern that were affected by the developments that were coming in. And it turned out, basically, if you look at the, you know, this is the area, they're going to flow everything basically into this pipe that already has all of this flowing into it. So you can see that, you know, whereas it goes to Woodside here, and you have enough capacity, and the analysis showed that it did, but you have a closer, or you have a bottleneck along the way. So the modeling was able to tell us what we needed to do, and the Banks Mill lift station is what we'd have to increase, so we need bigger pumps. And the force main would need to be enlarged, whether that's a parallel line, whether that's expanding the existing line, you know, those are some of the details. But when we worked with our consultant, the estimate is about a $1.2 million project. Now, that's pure economic development. That can be, paid for in multiple ways, but that's now a project that we should have on our planning horizon. Sanitary sewer modeling. So what we have done up to this point is we've had to make certain assumptions. Even with the amount of time we've been working with our GIS, we still have invert depths. There's still some pipes that we aren't exactly sure what they are and what the diameter is. So the modeling would require going in, checking those specific lines that need to be further evaluated and improved the information so that then we can create a model. Once we have the model, then basically as we add developments, as we add pipe to our system, it can be added to the model. We can see what the impact is. So when a developer says we want to build here, we can simulate what they are going to add, and then we can find out where we become capacity restrained. And if we become capacity restrained, we can either look at alternative ways to, you know, help the development come in, or, you know, realistically identify how much money, you know, they should be helping to participate, or even just planning for, you know, future development, how you want it, you know, to go. You know, the Renaissance, this will help us, you know, you make assumptions, you know, we can give you answers with the hydraulic modeling. And it would take about 12 months to complete to do the job if we, you know, once we get the money and initiate it. We'd go out for an RFQ, RFP, and you know, we'd do the follow all procedures. We do have the Sandhurst aerial crossing. I think you'll remember that you provided some consulting money for us to go out and evaluate alternate routes. We're actually still working on the rerouting because they require easements, agreements by property owners. We're hoping that we're nearing the end of that trail, but that's just a known project that we need to work on. One of the tools that our sewer utility people ask me every budget cycle, they want a 3,500 gallon vacuum truck. And what a vacuum truck will do, it'll actually do multiple things. This is a fairly expensive machine, but it'll do a lot of different things. One of the things it'll do is when you have a sewage backup, right now we have a jet truck that will jet it out and it'll basically just push it down the line. Proper technique would be to have the vacuum at the next manhole catching what is there and sucking it up and removing it from the system so it doesn't cause problems further on down the line. The system will be used in our lift stations. We do routine maintenance. It should be cleaned. You know, even though you're pumping, solids collect at the bottom, and you need to go in the bigger lift stations at least twice a year. Some of the other lift stations once a year may be enough, but you go through, and we're renting these units now, and you basically clean it. When you have a power outage, this also then can be a method to keep from having a SSO spill of sewage, because you the wet wells will accumulate for a period of time. You get there before it overflows, and so it'll help with that. It'll also help with cleaning stormwater, drain basins where, you know, sand and silt collect. And then it will also do potholing. This is where you have a probably a 6-inch diameter pipe. You inject water down, and it sucks out the dirt as it goes. So you can create it. It's a very safety improving situation where you have high density of utilities. You have water lines. You have or power lines and gas lines. You can use this to evacuate the dirt around it, locate exactly where the pipes are, where you're digging, and keep, you know, workers safe. So it's a very powerful tool, and we would use it. It would require a two-person crew to operate, but we'd run it in conjunction with our jet crew, and then we'd schedule it around for all sorts of jobs. And then when you have a problem at night, you can actually suck up water rather than you know, dumping it onto the street, you know, when you have silt and
you
you're
said
creating
dirt. Vacuum truck now, is that what?
Yeah, we rent them as needed, or
we
do other methods.
35 to 40 hours a week already, or?
No, we aren't using it for 35, 40 hours. What you do is you just don't do it. It just dumps, you know, the sewage goes down.
I mean,
I've seen
many times do the jet, and that's all they've had. What is it? I mean, for the rental of that truck, when you do
it's about $5,000 every time they show up to do anything.
Or do you get it for a couple of weeks at $5,000?
No, that's a day.
Oh, you're kidding me.
They're
new business for you, Phil. You're in the wrong business.
What's the life expectancy of that truck, George?
I don't know, but I don't know why it wouldn't be, you know, 6-8 years, that sort of thing. I don't know if you guys.
I have several other customers that use them. City Brevard comes to mind, and they've had theirs for, gosh, it's been at least 15 years since they purchased it. They use it all the time.
You maintain a piece of equipment, you know, you should be able to keep it going.
They can be used on more than just sanitary sewers also.
Yes.
You've got an option to use them on
storm
sewer.
Yes.
Because I've had to hire somebody to do that for me, and those are impressive trucks.
They are very versatile pieces of equipment. Ongoing risk evaluation.
I'm having difficulty. These glasses are new, and I'm not reading your legends carefully. Your highest risk is what color?
Red.
Red.
That's our extreme, and our two colors. It's our red and our purple that we've combined.
Okay. And your green is what?
Basically the lowest risk.
When I look, I'm not sure what page this is. When I look at...
That's in Brad's presentation.
Oh, okay. Well, Brad, when I look at this sheet...
Yes, ma'am.
Where is this location?
That's... The downtown area.
The red area is primarily the downtown area.
Where is this location?
On Woodside.
The green is Woodside.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah. Woodside. Yes.
There it is.
The northern side.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, neither. And I'll get a clearer map so that my old eyes can see better.
This was just supposed to be eye candy to give you the impression, and then we could give you any detailed information you would like to have.
Okay.
Just let us know.
George, at $5,000 a day for the gallon vacuum truck, what's the average length of time do we use this truck? I mean, if you had to...
Well, you're
going to
use it for a day, basically.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes 2 days if you've got a big project, like if we're doing a pump around and we're doing major, equipment, we might do a little bit extra. I will provide more detail on that specific project later, because I know that's one of those potentially controversial things. You either do it as a contractor, you do it, you know, with the city. And what we're trying to do is establish... a professional team that can handle those types of things, and you start using those tools to do all your work better, and we'll cover that. But the last thing before we move on to water is the InfoMaster database will be continuously updated. We'll get new ratings, we'll get new GIS information, and from the modeling and inspections that we do, and as we do that, we'll get better information, our risks will become more refined. If you look at the red areas that we'll start investigating, when we understand better what the model is spitting out and we get, you know, oh, this is worse than we thought or this is better than we thought, then we'll adjust the criteria. When Brad was talking about things like, you know, proximity to school, even that you have to kind of draw a circle around it and decide how close is close enough, how close is too close. Is that giving it too high a factor? Is that giving it too low a factor? So those are the things that we'll do to refine this model and make better planning decisions. And each year, we will update the analysis, and then you'll see the result of the learnings that we've had from all the projects, all the inspections, the new GIS information we found that we put in. So then going to water.
One question, and this goes back a few years. I'd asked a question
and Larry Morris had given us some data that how much inflow we had during a rainstorm across the city. And it showed up in our bill from the from
ESA.
ESA. And it was a considerable number. I was surprised. It's like a couple hundred thousand dollars a year.
Yes.
We pay extra for infiltration. And this is one of the ways we justified changing the water meters, that the vendor said in 10 years you lose 8 to 12% of your recording value. This is something, you know, you could look through Kim's books and see during a rain event. The next bill is considerably higher because average survey.
We actually have maps from the PSA and they record the rainfall and you can watch it go up and go down. These are some of the projects that will start attacking that.
The Sand River is the worst. It leaks all the way through, and when it plugs, the top blows off the line and it floods out in Hitchcock Woods.
And that's the area that is our first priority to work on.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep. So the same thing with some statistics about the water. We have 30 miles that we were rated as extreme or high risk, 196 miles that were medium risk, 171 that were negligible risk. And again, this was the original one that we showed you back in January. And you can see all the gray area because we really, we had done more work on the sewer. And so now we have filled it in. And you can see a different assessment. So, that's a data point. We kind of look, we analyze it and decide what our focus needs to be. So we want to investigate some of the pipes that have shown up that are now high risk. And we can do that through leak detection and methodologies that you can hire consultants and firms to do. Downtown pipes, valves, and fire hydrants, that became a point of focus. Right now, our guys are afraid to turn any of the valves downtown because they're afraid that if they turn them, they won't ever get them back open again because the stem will break off. It'll start leaking. These are the valves that, you know, if you look at the original water that system that came into the city, you're talking 1911. So, you know, these are, a lot of these valves, I think, are original to the whole system. The pipe itself is in good shape, and we don't find a lot of leaks in the joints. We find it in the valves. The plate that you see at Lawrence and Park, you've probably gone by it so much you don't even see it anymore, but it started leaking in the summer, and it's a valve. And the way that we have to fix it is we have to put in an insert valve at proper locations and then just, bypass it, eliminate it. So hydraulic modeling of the water system, again, is just as important to make sure that you can support a project like Renaissance downtown. You have a lot of the old pipes. You got a lot of 4-inch and then 2-inch kind of running parallel. We do have a lot of good water from the York Street tank, so it wouldn't be that difficult to provide additional water if it was found out to be needed, but that's where we need to do more engineering, quite frankly. And then water production asset maintenance, that's something that the city, I think, has been doing very well. That's your water tanks, keeping your water treatment plants up and running well, having the capacity there. We're actually in pretty good shape, but we have scheduled maintenance that still needs to come. So we looked at the heat map.
I have a question regarding your water leaks. About a year ago, you gave us some numbers that indicated that those leaks were pretty high.
Yes.
Are they under better control now?
They're improving, but they're not improving at the rate that we'd like to see them. We put in the variable frequency drives, and we saw some improvement. But then we go through spells that we don't quite understand why they kind of kick up. We did have a consultant go through and evaluate some of the system, and there's a couple of other pumps that are in the system that are, again, booster pumps on and off. They would recommend putting water tanks on the south side, and I realize that's, you know, you can't, you know, those ugly things that you can't put up. But since we have so many in-ground water tanks that with booster pumps, we need to come up with better controls to ramp them up slowly and ramp them down slowly so you don't create a hammer turning them on and off. So we've identified actually three or four more pumps that we need to do this to, and will be recommended in our capital plan to try and make our system kinder and gentler. So we have a list of things that we're going to try and start doing.
What's the estimated cost for a water tank above ground versus below ground?
Well, any water tank, it's almost a dollar a gallon. If you want a million gallons, you need about $1 million. And that would be exclusive of, property acquisition.
But I'm saying above ground. You mentioned that on the south, that's what you're saying.
That back when Larry was here, I did an investigation for him, and that was what the cost would be.
I'm actually surprised it's not more than that for gallon.
Well, everything keeps going up, but that was at the time, that was a budgetary number that they were giving us. So. So we started talking about the heat map, and you can see that these are a couple of hot spots. This spot right here is actually Hidden Haven. That's an area that has thin wall PVC pipe. There's actually only one valve on the whole subdivision. Last year we had, I think they said 77 work orders for leaks. And that whole system has a main that needs to be fixed. Now, this is Spencer Drive and all those houses that come off of it.
Single tree, double tree, all that stuff.
Yeah. And, but those aren't main issues as much as they are service line issues. So we've been working on that. And this does represent 2.5 years of work order. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to dump some of the oldest information and start looking at more current information. What I would expect to see is that this area is going down because we're catching up with the leaks and we're starting to replace them. And then, we'll investigate some of these areas a little bit. So we have a couple of projects that we were looking at. So we also, this is some of the valves that we were talking about. We need six or valves or more to isolate a section. The valve effects of the 50 customers, what's a reasonable number of customers to, when you're working on a specific pipe, you'd like it, at least every corner, and that might be, 10, 20 customers, but we have some that are 50 and even considerably more that will be affected because of the location or the lack of locations at different valves. So that is a project that we want to look at. And so when you look at that map, most of the valves are downtown. So what we've decided that we wanted to do was to kind of relay the grid of valves in the downtown area. The practical way to go through this, you can't turn off all the water to everybody, and it takes a long time to obviously replace things. So you can put valve inserts in so that you can basically hot tap a valve into a line. And then you can put them in where, it's a reasonable isolation, and then you can replace those lines. So our approach is to do something along those lines. And so over a 5-year period, it costs us, we've estimated about $1.5 million, because you're going to spend about $10,000 8 hot tap with a contractor. So you can do it as fast or as slow as you want. It's just a question of risk. We were going to spend about $300,000 a year and then just do it over a 5-year basis. But we could accelerate that. We could slow it down. That's where we have the oldest valves and the biggest potential for leaks. We also have identified several fire hydrants that really need to be upgraded. If you remember that project we did down Lawrence to connect Richland and Hayne, and we were going to replace two of those fire hydrants, we couldn't get the valves to close. We could not, so we abandoned that, and so this would be, those hydrants would eventually be replaced. There's also some hydrants where you don't have auxiliary valves to them, so you can't even do the maintenance on the valves, even if you have a problem. So again, insert valves to provide the proper working system. So we also have high-risk segments that we want to do some leak survey evaluation, as I mentioned before, and valve turning at elevated risk areas that are not in the downtown area. There are a few locations where I think what's happened is you've had a valve that has, like on Richardson Lake Road, you've got these little one-road subdivisions set up. So they have a main valve, and we need to exercise those valves to make sure they work so that when you have a problem, you can count on the valve. DHAC actually wants you to go through your valves and turn them regularly. And, you know, ideally you do that every 5 years. So you take your valves and you divide by five, you figure out how many valves should be turned. We haven't the staff to do that. We haven't been doing that. But that's something that we should do. So we can catch up with at least the high risk and the elevated risk areas. We can be a proactive. You're going to find ones that don't work. Then, of course, you're going to find how many you have to replace. And, then you start, doing projects in that area. So we'll do some leak assessment and some valve turning to work that. That's actually, I think it's, we assumed, that's about 500, let's see. Yeah, it's 500 valves that we're looking at that are the high risk. So the same thing then with the hydraulic modeling. We want to be able to assess our water capacity, where we would add water or users of water to different areas, and then know what the impact will be. And the same type of thing, it'll take about 12 months to complete. It isn't quite the same as having to go to every manhole and check an invert. It's a little bit less complicated, although every bit is as important. So we have a couple of identified projects, and like we said, we have two subdivisions, one Hidden Haven, the other one is Belhaven. I've forgotten the name of it. I meant to look it up. But it has an asbestos-containing pipe that we've been having problems with. Even though the leaks aren't as high, you have to have certified asbestos handling trained people to do the leak work on the pipe. So this is an area that we could, replace the pipe and then just we eliminate it from a concern. And then we have about $1.6 million of water treatment plant. That's a couple of water tanks. That's replacing some of the older systems that you have at Shaw's Creek. Shaw's Creek was built in the 50s. And over the years, we've had a program of replacing sections. And now we're getting into a couple of the more expensive ones, one being the electric panel, and those projects will be, highlighted in the capital.
And George, I'm going to assume where that asbestos pipe is, that is at the high risk.
That's one of the higher risk areas, yes. Yes. And see, we need to continue to analyze that. Asbestos pipe, if it's not getting a lot of problems, it's not a danger to the consumers. It's more of a danger to the workers as they remove it. We would just soon not have any in our system, and we don't have a bunch, so when we identify it, and it kind of kicks you into a let's do something about it mode rather than just leave it there. Mm-hmm. But it's not a big risk, and it's not a Flint, Michigan waiting to happen or anything like that, but it's just undesirable. So the same thing, as we add data, as we add information, we will continue to get better risk assessment, and we will come up with more projects to do. So stormwater, we have not started putting the stormwater information into the InfoMaster database. We had to prioritize water and sewer just because of the amount of work. Water and sewer also has an infrastructure spending source of the capital sales tax, where we don't have that with stormwater, so it all has to be funded through the enterprise fund. So we selected to, you know, continue to do it manually, I guess is what you'd have to say. And we do have, with our resources, we're putting we're putting the same information as we did for water, sewer, into our system, but we're using our current staff, Nika, and our utilities technician to, you know, get the information. So it just takes a little bit longer, but we're still doing. We've estimated we got about 171 miles, and all of this is, you know, you have discrete sections of stormwater. You know, the stormwater collects from a subdivision, goes here, and that has nothing to do with the one that collects over here and goes there. And so they don't interact quite the same as water and sewer, but that doesn't mean we don't have risks. So our focus has been to complete any identified projects that we have, and so we use the same risk. Even though we don't use a computer, we still model what's the likelihood of failure and what's the consequence of failure for storm pipe. Well, our likelihood of failure is corrugated metal pipe age. We know that corrugated metal pipe in the southeastern United States, at least our section of it, very acidic soils are corroding and deteriorating your pipe. You know, if you talk to anybody, they'll say it lasts 20 years, and I'm being generous in saying it's 25 to 30 years. That may be wishful thinking, but we'll kind of go with that as an operating assumption. So we'll still prioritize it, and we'll continue to update the Innovize as we can, but we've identified several projects based on just those, you know, corrugated metal pipe and the consequence of failure. And then the last point, Hitchcockwood Stormwater Task Force. I think everybody's familiar that we've got a task force now that's working on just Hitchcock Woods. We got $5.6 million in the capital sales tax money allocated for that project, but that may be a quarter of what's needed to do the whole project. And I just bring it up just as a reminder of the cost that may or may not come about. So we've identified projects. We have Chesterfield Bridge stormwater structure repair. That's our consultant estimated that the cost should be around $500,000. Our lowest bid came in at $950,000. So we went back, we did some re-evaluation of what we were asking for. We tried to analyze, figure out why the costs were so high, and we rebid it, and we'll find out on Thursday what the new bid will be. But so that's a known project that we're putting in. We also have a Parsons Circle and Kennedy Colony in the subdivisions where we're having sinkholes, and we've looked at the pipe. It needs to be replaced, and so we've estimated what it'll cost us to replace it. Then Mallard Lake Spillway, as you know, there was a lot of concern, especially with the dams and the problems and the rain that happened in Columbia. So we've looked at this. This is our class two rated dam. The DHEC comes out and inspects it. And the spillway, at a strict inspection of it, should be hardened so that it will have a lower risk of deteriorating in the 25, the 500, 100-year storm. So that's a high consequence of failure, but not necessarily a high risk of failure. So we're looking at that, and we've had money allocated for that, and it's just a question of getting resources on it. So our big concern is corrugated metal pipe. 25 to 30 years is being generous. And so we said, what are our significant consequence of failures? We started thinking, well, most of the tension ponds the outlets were put in with corrugated metal pipe. And the it's subject to the same wear and tear. So if you let that go to failure, you have the risk of losing the whole dam, and then you're going to pay a whole lot more replacing and fixing the dam for the tension pond than you would if you just kind of kept up with the pipe. The second thing is culverts located in roads. You know, Hounds Lake is where we got most of our corrugated metal pipe, and that's where we've had a couple of culverts that just under the roads have just, you know, you create a sinkhole under your road, and then, you know, you have cars having problems, and so that's a higher risk, higher consequence of failure. It's also a higher cost to repair because now you're repairing the road. And then just pipes located outside of the roads becomes the kind of the next level. The Hounds Lake subdivision is where we've experienced most of our problems, and it's the older subdivision, and it's all corrugated metal pipe practically. There's a few cement pipes, but mostly corrugated. Woodside will be, it's probably the yellow zone, and will become red at you know, some point in the future. So this is a project we did last week. We had a homeowner who had reported that they were having a sinkhole. We investigated it, and we actually had our crew doing some slip lining of this because it was an ideal situation. It's straight. It's in an area. So they dig out a pit, and then they actually push the pipe in and create a liner for it. This is what the pipe looked literally before they took it out. And you can see, you'd look at that pipe and you'd say, oh, that looks pretty good. But as soon as you take it out of the ground, that's what happens to it, which just shows you that, you know, what you're seeing is just rust, you know, holding something together, and it won't be long before it becomes a major problem. When you get to that, you have to replace it. If you're at that point, you have some in-line methodologies, slip lining. You could, do a spin cast. You could do different techniques to save it, but that's a whole lot cheaper to do it then rather than waiting till later. So what we've done is, if you look at Hounds Lake, these are all the different areas, and they represent a time frame. The different colors represent a different time. So yellow was where they were constructed in the 70s, and so you know you've got 40 years or more. So we're starting to do some camera work in there, and then the report is that it's all oval-shaped. It's going to be a real pain to repair. You really are going to have to dig it out, and you're going to have to take care of it with the higher-cost construction methodology. So you look at green, and the green is, you know, we need to inspect it, and we can come up and come up with a plan to repair it. But we use this map to determine how many miles of road stormwater we're at risk for, and then how much is like in the regular area. We also took the all the detention ponds that we have. We added up the amount of corrugated metal pipe that we think we have in those dams, and then we did the same thing. So we came up with $630,000 worth of projects just to spin cast, because that's definitely an area where you're not going to be digging. You're going to protect that pipe. If you do have any holes, you're going to go in and you're going to inject a grout of some sort, of expanding foam type of thing to fix it and fill the voids, and then you're going to spin cast it to put it back in good shape. The corrugated metal pipe is, again, it's just math. It's you know, what we estimate the cost to do spin casting to repair it, and times the number of linear feet that you have. That slide was, oh, that's our roads. So anyway, that's our projects for stormwater.
George,
so,
I'm sorry, before you move off the story, you said you can't use CPST for stormwater when you.
Yes, we don't have a fund. We didn't have a project identified for it. Well, you could for CPST 4,
right.
But you can't. There's nothing identified in 2 and 3
except
for stormwater.
The Hitchcock Woods.
Yes, the storm, the Hitchcock Woods.
Right.
That's
okay.
Correct.
All right,
yes.
I'm clear. Good.
Okay. So those, just to remind the statistics, we've got about 85 miles of Aiken roads. Our strategy for the maintenance, the road maintenance fee, we will, in 2017, we will continue with a planned road resurfacing based on worst first. And we've taken the money. We expect to make have about $500,000 for the road maintenance fee. There's approximately $158,000 if you divide up the CPST road resurfacing funds into a five-year bucket. That could all be moved into 1 year or 2 years. You know, doesn't have to be all spent like that, but for budgeting purposes, we just averaged it. So we have about $658,000 available to us for the next 5 years. We said, how would we spend it? So we would continue to just resurface roads this year, this coming year, but then we would also hire a consultant to go and rate the roads, use a standardized road evaluation methodology so that you can identify what are the needs. We would put this into the InfoMaster database management, and then we would come up with a true prioritization, which then we can start applying pavement preservation methodologies to understand how we want to allocate that money, how much would be spent on preserving the miles of road so that you can, you know, have a multiplying positive effect on the money you spend, leveraging it for good. And then the reconstruction of roads, you know, when they get so bad that you need to reconstruct them, then you would have that as well. So that will be our strategy for the coming year.
In CPDS 3, according to the November report, and you may have this under contract, but there's $1.3 million still in Capital 3.
Yeah, I don't think that some of the money had been spent or had been posted yet.
So you have under contract a chunk of that money?
Yes, we just hadn't spent it all.
All right.
We'll update those numbers if they're not correct, and I'll get with Joy.
Well, but I think these are actual expenditures,
yes,
that come out, so you could have contracts of some,
yes,
portion of
that. We tried to take that into account, and I estimated
that
we had like 753 unencumbered, so to speak.
So that's, and you've taken that into account?
Yes, that's what we tried to do, but I'll double-check those numbers because,
right,
I did not check them with Joy.
Well, what she gives us, what is supposed to happen, is what's in the kitty now, knowing that there's contracts out.
Well, I'll double check that.
All right, please.
I'll double check that. So, in summary, if you look at the funding for water and sewer, we've identified $17.3 million worth of projects. We've looked at what our funding sources would be, and you have an SRF loan, you have some revenue bonds that, and using the first Tryon capital modeling, you look at how much your present rate supports, how much your capital sales tax supports, the funding of those projects, and the conclusion is that we have enough funding keep those projects paid for, borrow $10 million at 1.8% interest, and spread out that cost over 20 years. And same thing with the revenue bonds for the list of the projects, if you accepted that list as being the current list, and that we would be able to support that and not have to have a rate increase. And we would complete all that work. We would be spending pretty much all of the CPST money. We keep a little bit for contingency, I guess you'd say, surprises, but that's where we're at. So that's a first look, and I think funding as a whole discussion probably warrants another work session to just kind of get into the meat of that and discuss the projects, what projects you select, what projects you say don't do. Obviously impacts a lot of what that is. But, I guess if I could say one thing, we haven't identified all the projects we need to do yet. We're well on the way, but there's still many things that need to be better assessed and better defined for not only cost, but, scope. Now, storm is a different story. We identified $15.7 million. And doing the same analysis is that we have a shortfall of about $5.6 million. So there we have a revenue spending deficit that has to be addressed. Roads, the $658,000 should be sufficient to support what we're doing. We need to get into the next year's process, hire a consultant, get that work done, and get to a position where we really do understand what our risk and what our gaps may or may not be. But we feel like that should be close to what we need. So the next steps is the SRF loan application. And once again, once we have agreement with SRF, we go to council to, and I've actually got some paperwork that for us to actually apply for the loan, we may have to have a council resolution that, you know, gives them the, you know, the confidence that, you know, council is asking for it. And of course, that's what we do. So we'll work with them to kind of get all the paperwork right, then present it to council, and you know, we'll have an opportunity to decide if we're going to do it. We will present all those projects in our FY 2017-18 budget. There are a couple of projects that I might suggest that we consider for capital sales tax. If we want to do, you know, hydraulic modeling and, you know, the things that get us ahead of the game, understanding where we need to go, those would be the things you would like to start now in the first quarter of, you know, calendar year 2017 rather than the third quarter of 2017. So that might be something that we talk about trying to do. That'd be the modeling and maybe some of the leak testing, that sort of thing. And then we'll continue to work with First Try-On on the capital planning model to, you know, come up with a strategic plan for funding. And then as we were talking about in Brad's presentation, as we get to the next criteria, we'll come up with better costing, better analysis, and then we'll be able to project further out with a little more reliability. This is kind of a, here are the bad things, the high risks that we see, and these are the projects we wanted, you know, to do to address them now. And then the next step is to do more work to identify what's coming in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. So, questions? We finally got to that slide.
I got one quick question.
Sure.
Are there any state or federal funds available, like as a consequence of the flooding Columbia and so forth suffered, especially where you're talking about that dam, where, you know, where you can get some money on for preventive maintenance or anything like that?
There are some. Right now, to be honest with you, I don't know if we've missed the opportunity for the Columbia projects or not. But we just didn't have the resources to kind of sit down and go after them. There's also, there was another disaster declaration that we're still within. And I think it's Matthew.
Matthew's the one.
Yeah, so so we would have some opportunity for that. So, and those would be 75-25, you know, loans, which is, you know, 75 is better than zero. So yes, we could look into that.
Thank you.
Does this include the line along the railroad track that's almost a mile long that has no bottom in it?
No, we haven't really looked at that.
Because it's been known for 12-15 years that the bottom's gone out of that pipe. It's that 4-foot
pipe. One would
pipe
predict that would be true just because of the age of when it went in the late 70s.
I was thinking that part of that was cameraed when the Lawrence Street caved in by the place there. Then the one, each block has been caving in by those because the corrugated's rusted out going down to it.
There's some risk associated with that, but we haven't really assessed that one yet.
Other questions?
Thank you, George.
One last question on that Innovize or this software, is that a manual repeatable license or is it a permanent city-owned license?
We own the software, but there's a maintenance cost that we've budgeted into, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll provide support. They'll give you, you know, over the phone training. They'll give you the updates in the software as they come along.
That's my next question about training. Do we have people to be able to use it effectively?
Yes. We are relying a lot on Brad right now. Brad has done some training of John and Mike. And the more you use it, the better you'll get. And there is more of that we want to do. So the answer is yes, but as long as we keep Brad smiling and working with us, we're in pretty good shape.
Well, and that also goes to the cultural shift that I talked about in my presentation, is that it's not just
John and the folks in the office that are using that software, all the way down to your guys out in the field. You mentioned a pipe that was cambered, you know, a long time ago. Well, that information that was cambered has to be documented and stored back into the software. Mm-hmm. So if that part's not being done, then that information gets lost.
Yeah, Ted did a lot of that work. We've got those videos, but we don't have anybody kind of working on it. But now we have a stormwater engineer, and we'll start becoming more methodical with that.
Because a lot of what you talked about winds up in that pipe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yes. It's been known for 12 to 15 years there's no bottom in it. And it just goes down street by street, the failure of the big T that goes in the top and the water running in.
Well, I've said the Chesterfield Bridge project, if we didn't have the blessing of good, hard clay, my predecessor would have solved it a long time ago, and I wouldn't have to be dealing with it.
Your predecessor just filled in the clay several times rather than fixing the pipe.
So, Mr. Mayor, we have two teams that are working on this. Our engineering team will work night and day through the holidays into January, finalizing their recommendations. Our finance team is beginning to meet with them to put a financial model together. We continue to assume several things. One, that this is the council's highest priority, that we get going on a long-range infrastructure plan, and number two, that we're putting proposals, plans together, utilizing existing resources. So we will put a plan together and present it to you next spring that presents the highest priority projects within existing resources, funded within existing resources.
Thank you, George. That's very good.
Very good to hear. And I think your assumptions are absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Now, the other thing is that we have updates on roads that will probably run a half an hour. So do you want to take a 10 or 15 minute break now?
Yeah, I was going to suggest, why don't we do that another
okay.
We're not going to let Mr. Poole off the hook.
That'll help you get
George. Part of the issue has been that line. I think the reason nothing was done on it is because of the cost of it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things were kind of along those things, but that doesn't.